love. I trust that we all know this expression made popular by the Beatles from their 1964 hit that Bill sang for us at the start of the service. When asked about the song's true meaning, Paul McCartney said in 1966, "I think you can put any interpretation you want on anything, but when someone suggests Can't Buy Me Love is about a prostitute, I draw the line." The idea behind it was that all these material possessions are very well, but they won't buy me what I really want. Some years later, when reflecting on the perks that money and fame had brought him, McCartney remarked that perhaps the title should have been Can Buy Me Love. I tried to do some internet research to find out where that expression comes from, but the popularity of the song made it impossible for me to find any reliable information that wasn't about the song. So I don't know exactly where and when this expression, money can't buy me love, may have come from. However, it does seem safe to assume that that expression is coming from wisdom that we can find all over the world. In our culture, it's a long-standing tradition. In other cultures, it's a long-standing tradition that we should be wary about pursuing material things. I have a number of quotes for us right now. They're coming from different places and different times. I've got them in a very rough chronological order. And these quotes reflect this wisdom about being cautious about materialism. So this first one is from Proverbs in the Jewish Bible, chapter 23, verses 4 and 5. "Do not wear yourself out to get rich. Do not trust your own cleverness. Cast but a glance at riches, and they are gone. For they will surely sprout wings and fly off to the sky like an eagle." A Polish proverb says this: "When I had money, everyone called me brother." Confucius wrote this in the Analects 4.9. "The master said, 'A true gentleman is one who has his heart, who has set his heart upon the way. A fellow who is ashamed merely of shabby clothing or modest meals is not even worth conversing with.'" John Muir, one of the founders of modern conservation, said this: "I am losing precious days. I am degenerating into a machine for making money. I am learning nothing in this trivial world of men. I must break away and get out into the mountains to learn the news." And I got one last one. This is from hip-hop artist and producer Afrika Bambaataa. I never imagined I would be quoting Afrika Bambaataa in a sermon, but here we go. "You want to buy cars and houses and castles? All of that's on you and how America has systematized your mind to be into materialism. Hip-hop ain't got nothing to do with that. I'm glad that anybody making money has picked themselves up. I just want them to give some of it back to the community." So the sentiment of all these quotes seems pretty clear, even though they're coming from a whole lot of different places and different time periods. All of them are saying that there are things in life that matter more than material goods. Years ago, I delivered a sermon here based on the book, The Top 5 Regrets of the Dying. And it was written by a hospice aide named Bronnie Ware. And here are those 5 regrets again. Regret number 1, I wish I'd had the courage to live a life true to myself, not the life others expected of me. Regret 2, I wish I hadn't worked so hard. Regret 3, I wish I'd had the courage to express my feelings. 4, I wish I had stayed in touch with my friends. And the 5th regret, I wish that I had let myself be happier. So this book that Ware wrote was based on her experience as a hospice nurse, and these were the top 5 things that people who were dying had revealed to her in thinking about their lives. And as we see, none of those regrets were things like, "I wish I had bought more stuff," Or, gee, I sure wish I had been a better capitalist. So given where I seem to be driving this bus so far, you might be surprised to now hear me say that I believe money can buy you love. Now, I'm not suggesting that all of the wisdom that I just discussed is wrong. There are indeed lots of things in life that are more important than accumulation and material goods. And as many of us, I'm sure, have discovered over the course of our lives, money is not a solution. Money can't buy us anything and everything. It doesn't fix life. But I would like to make the case that there are ways that money can buy us love. And what I mean by this is that the way that we use our resources, and as you know, in UU, we often refer to the three T's of time, treasure, and talent. So the way in which we use those three T's, it can build and maintain the things that channel our love and then reciprocally bring us love in return. Now, it's not a transaction like I put a bill into a vending machine and a bottle of love falls out and then I drink it. Money can't buy love is a transaction. Here's my wealth, give me love. So in that sense, the quotes that I read earlier and the Beatles have it right. Love can't be bought as a transaction. Here's my money and now I'm going to exchange it for love. But what happens if we step back from that capitalist idea of buying and consumption, and instead we move to a social and relational understanding of buying? And I should put buying in air quotes there. Buying, because I'm not using it in the standard way or the conventional way. That's what I want to get us thinking about now. So how can we buy love, not as a transaction, but as a relationship, in a relational way? As I was working on this sermon, a Latin expression came to my mind that I used to teach about back in my academic days. So in Roman religion, they had a theological expression, do ut das, three words, D-O, second word U-T, third word D-E-S, do ut das. In English, it roughly means, I give so you may give. Roman religion was not a religion based on beliefs. They believed that what you thought about the gods really didn't care about. What they believed the gods cared about was correct actions, not correct beliefs. And the term for that in religious studies is called orthopraxis. So you've no doubt have heard of orthodoxy. Orthodoxy is correct beliefs. Roman religion was geared towards orthopraxis, correct practice. What are they concerned about practicing correctly? Well, for the Romans, offering sacrifices and offering some of your wealth to a particular god or goddess or to a deified emperor or to your ancestors, when you offered those things in the correct way, it then strengthened and empowered the being that we were directing that offering to, whether it be a god or goddess, an emperor, or an ancestor. And in Latin, that was referred to as mocte esto. It literally means be thou increased. May my sacrifice strengthen your power. So when I say that Roman religion was focused on action, it wasn't just that making the offerings was important, but also how you did it. There was a very precise method and formula with exact words that had to be said in the exact correct order in the exact correct way every single time. The assumption was if we don't do it the right way, that being may not take it. They might reject it. We don't want that, right? We want them stronger. Because the stronger we make them, then the more powerful they get, and then the more that they can do for us in return. So when we make offerings, but not just any offerings, pleasing offerings in a pleasing way, then the immortals grow in power. They bless us. So the goddess Ceres, we sacrifice some crops to the goddess Ceres, the goddess of agriculture and grains. She's now more powerful as a result, and she'll bless our crops, and we'll have more crops, right? And then it becomes an ongoing cycle. We want to be victorious in battle, we'll sacrifice to the god Mars, and then it will become so. So when we do this all across the board to all the gods and goddesses, all the deified ancestors, then the more powerful the empire can be. And all of that will then add up to Pax Deorum. Pax, as you may know in Latin, is peace. So Pax Deorum, peace of the gods. When we give our part and strengthen them, and they then bless us in return, it creates a perfect, harmonious relationship. Something based on reciprocity between our world and the divine world. I didn't want to spend too much time to go down this rabbit trail today, but the issue the Roman Empire had with Christians was not about beliefs in any way. They could care less. You can believe in Jesus all you want to. But when it came time to sacrifice to the gods, if you refused that, now we got a problem with you. Because you're being an anarchist. You're saying you don't want Rome to be strong, and you don't want the gods and goddesses to be powerful. So it wasn't about beliefs, it was about a refusal to act. All right, so let's shift that notion then from the Romans onto ourselves. When we give our offerings and sacrifices to a congregation in the form of the three T's, our time, our treasure, our talent, by strengthening the congregation is increased, and can in turn do more for us and for our fellow congregants and for our community. Our giving, whatever form that giving takes, it establishes a reciprocal relationship between ourselves and between our faith community. And the same would be true of a nonprofit or an organization. It's not true just of congregations. I'm going to coin a term today, Pax Universalica Unitarian. And I checked several translators, and they all put universal before Unitarian. I guess that would be proper Latin. So, peace of UUism. The harmony of the self and of the community engaged in a mutual and ongoing nourishment. How long will it last? Well, it'll last as long as we continue to be an active part of it. And when we're in that reciprocal relationship, acceptance, friendship, community, justice, engagement with big questions, love, those are all part of the nourishment that relationship can bring us in return. So we're giving, we're offering, but it's not a transaction. Rather, it's about creating a bond. It's about creating a relationship. So in this way, time, talent, and treasure, or money, can and do buy us love. Money also buys them love while it buys us love. Who are they? Anyone, everyone. Starts with this congregation, it moves outward into the community, and ultimately far beyond us to people that we'll never know. When we think of money in a transactional way, as a direct, for the most part, it's directed towards the self and towards the family, those close to us. Research suggests that there's only so much that spending money and lavishing ourselves can do for us. a 2014 article in the Wall Street Journal, and this was based on research out of the University of British Columbia. The study noted this on the relationship between money and happiness, and they were studying people of the upper class, people with more than enough. How these upper class folks used their money, so how they used their money was a far greater determinant of their happiness than their quantity of money. Money can't buy you love, and it can't buy you happiness either. Greater quantities of money do not equal greater quantities of internal wealth. Whether we measure that internal wealth as love, happiness, peace, or any other synonyms that come to mind. So what this research is showing us is that no matter where these people were within the definition of wealthy and upper class, those who spent the money on themselves, lavished themselves, were on the whole less happy than those who were generous. And why is that? Well, lavishing ourselves, it can feel good, right? I mean, that's why shopping addiction is addiction. Because the human being is set up so therefore, the price tag of how we lavish ourselves doesn't bring greater happiness or longer happiness. Me buying my little go-kart of a Prius and a billionaire buying themselves a mega yacht has exactly the same emotional payoff. His may have cost tens and tens of millions. Emotionally doesn't do anything more for that billionaire than me buying a car. On the other hand, generosity feels good, and it feeds us internally in a way that spending money and buying things and lavishing ourselves cannot. Generosity has been proven to have a longer and more lasting sense of happiness and peace. So when we feed this community or any community with our treasure and our talents and our time, we strengthen this community's ability to be a beacon of liberal religion and liberal values. We contribute to building the kind of world that we want to see. And that benefits everyone. And it benefits anyone who needs tolerance or acceptance, support, love in the face of hate, a place to grapple with big questions. So I would make the case that our generosity, whatever form that generosity takes, contributes to buying love for ourselves and for others. So let's conclude where we began by thinking about the expression in the song, "Can't Buy Me Love," or "Money Can't Buy Me Love." The overall message that we should be wary about materialism and instead be focused on the things that matter most in life, that's wisdom that is always worth reminding ourselves of. But, as I've made a case today, we can use our resources, our time, our talents, and our treasure. We can use them to enter into and to maintain a reciprocal relationship. And when we enter into that reciprocal relationship, it returns love to us on account of our own commitment and investment. And that love isn't limited to ourselves either. What we put into a UU church has the potential to spread love outward too. So money can buy us love, but not as a transaction, but as a relationship. So I conclude my message today by saying, it is my wish that we all get rich.